choir to be a very short message, at least time for our brethren to give their reports. I want to remind you again that somehow this is an essential thing, and our brethren have got to give a report of their stewardship. It's got to be done at least once a year, and our brethren have tried their best over the years to decide when to do it. Sometimes we had a special meeting set in for it, and very few turned up as if they weren't interested. And then we've tried it at different times on a Wednesday night, and now this on a Sunday night. You see, if people are giving their money in to the offering, they have a right to know where it's going, what's being done with it. And our brother Willie has been doing this now for years, and he'll give us his financial report tonight, and I think Linwood's going to tell us something about the Sunday school and so on. You have a right to know what's going on and how it's being done. Now, in the past weeks, we've been looking at some lessons from Paul's second letter to Timothy. This has been my last Sunday. I want you to turn to chapter 4 of 2 Timothy. On Wednesday night we were looking at the opening verses of chapter 4, the charge given to Timothy. Now tonight we're going to look at Paul's closing commentary on his Christian career. 2 Timothy 4 verse 6. For I am now ready to be offered. Time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. I'm sure the Lord have blessed us the reading of these verses. Again, I remind my own heart as well as yours the conditions under which the apostle wrote this epistle. Let us try and capture now what his thoughts were lying in that prison in Rome. He had been there before, and he had been in other prisons. You remember he was in the prison at Philippi and was beaten with stripes there. Then he was in the prison at Caesarea. Then he was taken to Rome for his first imprisonment. And while the scriptures don't say so, it's obvious in the reading that he was set at liberty again from his first imprisonment. And then there was the second imprisonment, which was this one. And he knows now that his days are numbered. He hasn't much longer to go. The day of his departure is at hand. And he's writing this, his last will and testament, to his young friend Timothy. And while he is giving certain charges to Timothy, he now comes to this very touching part. He says, but for as far as I am concerned, I'm now ready to be offered. He's looking to the day now when he's going to leave this scene and go to be with the Lord. You know, I sometimes try to make a contrast between this man here and the man whom he was named after. If you go back to the Old Testament, you remember Saul was the first king chosen by the people to reign over them in Israel. But oh my, he had a good start. Was the Saul of the Old Testament. But oh, what an awful, tragic end. He didn't even know the Lord had departed from him. Do you remember how he finished up going to the witch of Endor? And what an end, Saul. But here this man who was called Saul and had his name changed to Paul. What a triumphant finish this man had. At this point, he seems to be like the soldier laying down his armor. finished the fight. He's writing this letter. There's another part in the Old Testament sometimes you could put along this side as a kind of comparison along with it on the level. Don't know if you've ever spent time to examine the last day of Elijah. The last day he spent. I've often asked myself, if I thought that tomorrow was my last day, I wonder how would I spend it? How would you spend our last day if we knew it was to be our last day on this earth? Very interesting to notice the journey that Elijah took on that last day and who he took with him, the places they visited, and then he went up into glory. And here's a man here who knows that his end is coming. I like to think of him as he gives his verdict of the past. He begins to review the life he has lived, what it's been like. And as he reviews the past, he says, it's been a fight, but I have fought a good fight. Think of the fight that was fought. You know, I think young people, when they trust us elderly folks, whenever they get saved, they should be made to realize that the Christian life is not always an easy life. We're going to be faced with difficulties. In fact, your opposition and your difficulties may come from sources that you least expect. Of course, we've understood this, that we have enemies. We have the world, the flesh, and the devil. It's going to be a fight. But we have been provided with armor to meet the enemy. And we're asked in Ephesians 6 to put on the whole armor of God. And here's a man who has fought the good fight. So we take it that he has put on the whole armor of God and has stepped forward, just as young David stepped down with his faith in God to face that mighty giant Goliath. And he went down and slew him and brought his head back again. You know, Paul here goes out and he fights the fight all the way through. And the end has come now. It says, I have fought a good fight. Not just a battle. You know, during the war, two world wars, of course, I'm talking of now, there were many battles. But it was one long fight from start to finish. And then there came the point of the triumph. But sometimes in a battle, you win a battle or you lose the battle, go on again. But Paul is looking at now the whole arena. He's come right through the whole fight. And he says, I have fought a good fight. But then again, he says, it's like a race. And this is not the only place. In other places in his writings, he speaks of the Christian life as being like a race. It's not just a dash, like a 100-yard sprint. It's not that. It's a long marathon. It's a long race. And in that race, there are going to be difficulties. There are going to be preparation for it. Times when things are going to come against you. But he says, in this race, he says, I have run a good race. I have finished the course. You know, I don't know what you think, but sometimes I get a sore heart when I think of people that we started off with, crowds of young folks. And I often say to myself, I wonder where so and so is now. I wonder what became of them. I was just telling Kenny a few minutes ago there, I had a letter the other day from a man. I always think of him as a young fellow because he was a young lad in my Bible class away back in the early 40s. And along with two others, they went away to the mission field. One went to China. One went to British Guiana. And the other went to one of the other places down in South America. The three of them went to mission field. Two of them are back in Scotland. that Robert, who sent me this letter at the present time, he's back down in Guyana, which of course is not British Guyana now. When they got their freedom, as it were, and independence, they call it, he said they turned communist and they had all to get out. They just gave the foreign missionaries so long to get out. But now they've been given permission, they can go back on a visit, just on a visit. And he's down there now for a week or two visiting some of the Christians down in Guyana. But I think of him and the others, and he was mentioning on his letter a number who used to be in that Bible class who are still going on for the Lord and doing well. Now that brings a lot of courage and encouragement to you when you read of them going on for the Lord and doing a work for the Lord after the time we spent with them trying to help them. But it grieves you when you hear of others who didn't go on. Young folks who started well, but like Demas, they were attracted to the things of the world and they failed to go on. I remember a young fellow who was a good singer. I used to love George when he sang. And one of the favorite hymns in these days was he used to sing, "Lord, I have started to walk in the light, shining around me from heaven so bright. I've bid the world and its follies adieu. I've started in Jesus and I'm going through." And my, he could sing it. But he failed to go through. He failed to go through. I'm sorry for him. Kept in touch with him for a while. In fact, the matter is, I got home some years ago there and I learned that he was back in Scotland again. He'd been out of Scotland for some years working. He was back there and he had lost his wife. His two boys were married and he was all alone. He'd gone into a rest home. I said to my brother, I said, "Jim, would you care to take me to this place? You know where it is. I want to visit George." So we went. I remember we knocked the door. And when he opened the door and saw us, he just shook his head and the tears began to run down. He says, "Come in, come in." Went in, had a time with him, and we prayed with him. Thanked us profusely for coming. He spoke of the days when we enjoyed the things of the Lord and the fellowship of God's people. I come home, I wrote a letter back to my brother, says, "Brother Jim, get one of the brethren to go with you and visit George." I says, "I'm sure he's anxious to meet again." He came down to the service that Sunday night, say that, and they all gave him a welcome. He really was back in his heart with the Lord. I asked my brother to go and visit with him with somebody else and see. I got the letter back. He says, "It's too late. He was buried this week." You know, when you think of some people like that, the gifted, he was gifted, but his life was wasted. Life was wasted. No doubt, I believe he was restored to the joy of the Lord before the end. But it's sad when you see people who once professed to know the Lord and they go on and you think they're going to run well and they get stuck. Paul says, "I've finished my course. I've finished it." You know, this year they're going to have the Olympics here. And I don't know what you're interested in, but I'm always interested in seeing people run the track. I like to see a long distance race. I suppose that's because I used to go out and run the 3 mile when I was a boy. And I liked that. They called the boys marathon. I like to see those people, the way that they put the effort into it. I like to watch the expression on their faces as coming near the wooden post. And they seem to put the last ounce of energy into it to get there to breast the tape. Finish. Paul says, "I finished my course." But they don't all finish the course who start. Some are disqualified for breaking the rules. Some are unable to finish the course and they fall out by the way. Isn't that the same in the spiritual thing? There are those who are ever breaking the rules and they won't be crowned unless they run lawfully. others who have fallen out by the way. And it's hard to tell at times what causes them to fall out by the way. Paul says, I am looking back on my life. It's like a race. I have finished my course. I've come to the end. But he says that life is not only a race to be run, it's a treasure to be kept. I have kept the faith. He doesn't say I've kept my faith. I've kept the faith, and most of you are aware of this now, that when you speak of the faith, you're speaking of the whole Word of God. The doctrines of the Word of God that's been given to us, that's the faith. The faith is what we believe. Your faith is what you believe with. The faith is the thing you believe. He says, I have kept the faith. That's an important thing because we're living in days, as I said this morning, when people are denying the faith. They're denying it. Some are denying the deity of the Lord Jesus Christ. Some are denying the perfect humanity of the Lord Jesus Christ. Some are denying the inspiration of the Scriptures. They're denying all sorts of things. They're denying the creation. They're denying the faith. And they're doing it under a religious banner. How difficult it is at times to know exactly who you're talking to and what they believe. He says, I have kept the faith. What an end. What an epitaph to give to a man. They could raise his tombstone and say, here lies the Apostle Paul. He fought a good fight. He finished the course. He kept the faith. That was his verdict on the past. But what was he like when he was lying in that prison, knowing that any day he may be taken out now and his head put on the block and the axe would fall? Absent from the body, he'd be present with the Lord. How did he feel about it? Well, here is his vigor in the present. He says, I am now ready to be offered. Ready to be offered. You know, the idea is this, that here was a man who says, now, I'm quite willing to end my life in sacrifice. I'm ready to be offered. Time of my departure is at hand. You know, Paul was a man who was always ready. Ready at all times. When he wrote his letter to the Romans, he says, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. He was ready for service. Now, I wonder, brothers and sisters, are we always ready for service? If so, what service? We can't all do the same thing. You know, some people are very, very gifted the way they speak to children. They seem to have that adaptability just to know how to handle children and how to speak to them. My father could speak to audiences, large or small. But put him up before children, he was useless. He had no way with them at all for children. But some folk, again, are so gifted they can handle children. Children just simply love them. But put them up to speak to adults, and sometimes they're most amusing. But they don't have that ability to bring you a word of exposition. Well, why not? God has given us all different gifts. I love to go down with Bobby to that rescue mission, speak to those men. But you know, if some people were going down there, it would shake them, even to try to speak to those fellows. And then I've done a lot of open-air preaching in my day. At times when we had crowds around us and the hecklers shouting at you and asking questions and saying all sorts of things, that didn't worry me one little bit. I found a way of dealing with these fellows. Although some didn't approve of it, it worked. It's not everybody could do that. You couldn't perhaps stand up in a desk with a couple of hundred men round about you shouting at you, atheists there and all sort of people there trying to interrupt your meeting. A fellow came over one night right in front of the desk. We had a little folding desk and we wondered what had happened. The crowds that gathered that night, the biggest crowd we'd had, they were way out, packed in round about. But we discovered after that these fellows had gone right round. See, if you go to the Marble Arch in London, you might find about 24 or more meetings going on at the same time, all round that corner, what they call Speaker's Corner at the Marble Arch. Some would be preaching politics. The Roman Catholics usually got the end place, and then the second place was taking up where crowd the Evangelization Society of London, and we used to pitch in right after them, and all there were others preaching all sorts of things. You don't know what they would be preaching. And these fellows came round, and wherever there was anything at all to do with religion, they were going to disturb it. And they did. Even the great crowd from the London City Mission, they got them to close down that night. But I saw some of them standing in our audience. I knew one of them. And this fellow came right up in front of my desk and lifting his hand right up in front of my face. And he's shouting, "Hail Lucifer! Hail Lucifer!" These were what they called the Luciferians. They were going to disturb our meeting too. They were going to bring us down. So I thought, "No, fellow, you'll not do that with me." So I started making some gestures and began to preach. And I got my hand up, and he came too near, and I just swiped him like what Peter did with the sword. I swiped him right on the ear with that there. I gave him a karate, right down the ear. He turned around, he said, "Hey, you don't." I said, "You get back from me, or it'll be harder the next time. This is my desk, and I'll swing my arms where I like." The crowd were with me. And he didn't stop us. And my, that night, what a night we had. The devil was busy and so was the Lord. Help us. We saw results that night. But you know, it's not everybody could do that. The Lord may not have given you that sort of ability. But surely he has given you some ability. Ready to serve. May I ask you, brothers and sisters, are you ready to, when it comes the end of your life, will you be able to say that you have served? He was ready for service, but he was ready for suffering. When they said to him, "Don't go up to Jerusalem, Paul, don't go, this will happen to you." He says, "Look, don't stand in my way. I'm ready not only to suffer, I'm ready to die for the testimony." Ready. Not only was he ready to serve, he was ready to suffer, and here he's ready for the sacrifice. "I am now ready to be offered." That's how he considered his death that was coming. It was like being laid on the altar and being offered up as an offering to God. But what about his vision of the future? "Paul, you've done a good work. You spent all those years traveling around parts of Asia and parts of Europe. You've been a faithful man since the day you were converted. What do you think of the future now? What's your views now?" "This is my view of the future. There is laid up for me a crown." That's what he says here, isn't it? "And it's a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day." Oh, what a vision of the future. That when this old world was finished, when his work was complete, he was going up. He was going to be with the Lord. And he's looking forward to the day when he'll stand at the Bema. That's another thing we'll see this year. These folks have come in to partake in the Olympics. My, they're anxious to take back a gold medal to the country from which they come. And when they stand up there at the Bema, and the judge puts the medal round their neck. The one gets the gold, then there's the silver, then there's the bronze, and others are looking on and got nothing. They did their best, but they didn't get anything. But here's the man with the gold. They were wondering how many medals he's going to win and take back. Or they were wondering how many they're going to keep in the United States. And they're all there. And in the old days, it wasn't medals they got. It was wreaths or crowns, withering crowns. But there was an honour attached to it. And while it was a withering crown, see the honour of being crowned as the winner. And they're walking round, and the people are applauding them. Says Paul, I'm going to the Bema someday. And there'll be a righteous judge there. And he's going to give me a crown of righteousness. Well, you're boasting about now, Paul. No. He says, not only for me. Not only me. But unto all them also that love his appearing. What a man. His end has come. Says, I'm looking back. Well, it was a fight, but I fought a good fight. It was a race. I've finished my course. It was a treasure to be kept, and I've kept the faith. And now at the present time, he said, I've got this much vigor. I'm ready to be offered. I'm ready for it when it comes. And I'm looking to the future. One day we're going to stand at the Bema, and our work is going to be put under review. And on that day I'll receive the crown of righteousness. I trust we'll take that as his last will and testament, as an encouragement for us, that we'll set this before our minds, that we also can fight the good fight. We can run the race with patience, looking forward to that day when we'll stand before the Lord and perhaps hear him say, well done, thou good and faithful. Now I think our brother Herbert will be taking over and telling us what's to be.
I think Glenn and William just